Hey, welcome to Your Turn. Mike Causey here. Delighted to have you with us. We're going to do a slight departure today from our normal format. Typically, we sort of follow the money and tell you what's going on in the pay and benefits world and thrift savings plan and whatnot. But a colleague of mine, Tom Timmon, who does the Morning Drive show, had a very, very interesting column a couple of weeks back and another good one this week. But I wanted to talk about the first one, and it was called, the headline said, "Do Feds Really Receive Regular Evil Tongue Lashings?" And I thought it was interesting because this is we are, of course, quite sympathetic to federal workers here for obvious reasons. Not only are they our target audience, but we understand them. Well, we think we do. But this was kind of a shape-up or chip-out sort of piece. And I wondered, Tom, thank you for taking time out to do this. You just come off another shift, a brutal shift this morning. What inspired you to write this piece?
Well, I'm not sure exactly what inspired me. I think it was the accumulation of lots of things that I've been reading, and almost every interview with even members of Congress, some people that the observer community surrounding federal service always talk about how we've got to end Fed bashing and how there's too much Fed bashing. And what really is going on, I feel, is not so much Fed bashing, but there are attempts in Congress regularly to change pay and benefits for federal employees and frankly trim them in some manner so that they're more like what is received by people in the private sector. And I don't see that as Fed bashing. It may be something they don't like, but I don't think it's something that's deliberately aimed at because they're not liked or disrespected or something. I mean, over the decades, federal employment has constantly been tinkered with by Congress, sometimes to the better, sometimes to the worse, also by administration. So I think it's important to separate out the real nuts who do bash feds and, you know, the Timothy McVeigh, I guess, is the ultimate yep. horrifying example of that. But not everything really is Fed bashing, even though it might sound like it. I just think feds need to be a little bit thicker skinned and a little bit more discerning about how they interpret what they're hearing.
Well, I remember a Texas congressman who at one point referred to federal law enforcement officers as jackbooted thugs.
That was during the IRS scandals.
Right, right. Well, and this is even before that, and a few months after that, some armed terrorists, domestic terrorists, broke into the House side of the Capitol and killed a guard, and the guard died defending this congressman who had called federal law enforcement officials jackbooted thugs. So you're right, there are extremes and there are norms. When I started on this beat 1,001 years ago, one of the urban myths about federal workers was that they did not pay taxes. You know, I mean, many people believe that. I haven't heard that one in a long time, but there are some myths. I remember about 5 years ago, the late, great Bill Bransford, attorney with Shaw Bransford and Roth, we were at a conference, the Federal Dispute Resolution Conference in Phoenix, I think, or somewhere wonderful where they have their summer conferences. And he came into a meeting carrying a copy of USA Today newspaper, and the above the fold story, as I recall it, was federal workers make more than people in the private sector. And he had a couple of copies of it, and I remember he slammed it down on the table and he said, "This means trouble." And that story was followed by others saying federal workers were overpaid any way you look at it. Other people picked it up, the Washington Post, even to some extent, certainly the Wall Street Journal and the Washington Times. But I'm constantly amazed that every year we report, almost without comment, the fact that morale has never been lower. Well, the report last year said it had never been lower than it was in 2013, and the 2013 said it had never been. What do you make of that?
Well, that pay and benefit issue, you know, that goes back and forth seemingly ceaselessly. And you know, the American Heritage Foundation has one view on it, and the American Federation of Government Employees has a different view on it. My own feeling is that pay and benefits are so widely variable depending on the sector, depending on the profession itself, that you can't make any generalization. But if you can make any, I would say that in so many professions, federal employees are not even close to being paid more than their private sector counterparts. I think of the lawyers at the Justice Department. Does anyone ever leave the Justice Department or leave, I don't know, the EPA or Homeland Security and go to a job in the private sector earning less than they did as a Fed? I don't think so. I think people go because sometimes they can double or triple their salaries when they leave to the federal government. So I think the basic pact is still in place that you accept a certain amount of limitation on what, especially on the upside of what you can earn, but that goes with the expectation, the proper expectation of some respect for what you do, because it is public service, and some job protections that people in the private sector don't have.
Listening to a discussion, I think it was on NPR this week, and they were talking about the fact that so many members of Congress are millionaires now, you know, at least half.
And a lot of them didn't come to Congress that way.
That's right. Some married well, others made it on their own. Salary is $174,000 a year. So how do you become a millionaire in an expensive town like this with expensive living? And the solution, of course, is you serve in Congress for a while, either make some money there on the side, or you parlay your congressional experience into a job as a K Street lobbyist or something like that. But the average federal worker can't do that, I don't think.
No, the average federal worker, I mean, there's a couple of million of them. They don't leave and be able to collect $200,000, $300,000, $500,000, $600,000 for a speech.
Mm-hmm.
Not, you know, the Secretary of State might be able to do that, but most people don't. A lot of people, you know, they go to, because of their expertise, they can go to think tanks and contractors where what they know can be very helpful to the contractor. But what they also don't realize sometimes for that big salary, that, and I've seen this happen with many people leaving the contracting and information technology area, when you go to work for that contractor, it seems like all moonlight and roses and a big salary when they hire you. But sometimes the honeymoon doesn't last very long because those contractors make a lot of demands. And they could be profit and loss related, they could be sales target related, and a lot of federal situations have not had those kinds of parameters as part of the job. And it's really a fish out of water situation. So, so it, not only you can make more in the private sector, but it is not a free ride. Companies don't pay a lot of money because they don't expect anything but your name on the door.
Got two interesting comments today based on my column about your column, if we can follow that logic. And one is from a guy, he said, David A., said, I speak with 43 years experience. It is truly bad, more so for some than others. As much as the media and the Pauls and the others you mentioned, it is the result of affirmative action over 48 years, blah, blah, blah. It's also about poor management out of control. The complaint that you can't fire a Fed could just as well be easily stated that you can't fire a federal manager, no matter what they do. And another person commenting on that subject said, he said, it's sort of like the argument we say gasoline is expensive here, but it costs more in France. And he said, I don't care how much gasoline
That's right.
costs in France. I'm here. I live here. And he was talking about his own salary.
Yeah, I mean, and that's another, you know, canard. You can't fire a federal employee. You can't fire a federal manager. And it's more difficult in the private sector because in the private sector, for most situations, everyone is an employee at will. And the board of directors can get rid of you. Your boss can get rid of you. You know, your boss's boss can get rid of your boss. And that's just the way it is. I mean, there are protections that have developed over the years. But basically, everybody's an employee at will. That's not the case in the federal government. And that is a constitutionally protected creation that they have, and that is they have a proprietary rights to the job if you're in the federal or any public sector. And so there's due process before you can be let go. But that doesn't mean you can't be let go. I think the statistics are out that about 77,000 feds have been fired for cause over the past 10 or 12, 13 years.
Yeah, the Merit Systems Protection Board came out with a very good report rebutting that. I guess the question is doing the math on that. Is you look at that number and you think, gee, that's a lot, or is it not many? And you have to compare it to other things. But need to take a real short break here. Be right back talking with Tom Timmon about his column the other day. Welcome back to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey. I'm talking with Tom Timmon, who does the morning drive and who graciously agreed to sit in with us this morning, talk about two recent columns he did. One is on the fact that maybe federal workers aren't as beaten up as they think they are, and then the other about the proprietary rights to federal job. And, you know, I always thought if I wrote a book, I think I would entitle it, It Seemed Like a Good Idea at the Time. And the idea being, you know, now, you know, well, absolutely. I mean, but now the argument is you can't fire government workers. Why is that? Well, A, you can fire, I mean, you do. But the reason is that in the old days, not that long ago, when an administration changed hands, so did the government. You know, throw the rascals out, bring the rascals in.
Yeah, there was a patronage system for the first part, you know, the first half of the republic, really. And that didn't buy very much in terms of quality government. On the other hand, you know, the federal government didn't loom as large in the affairs of the nation back then as it does now. And so really, you know, in order to have a government in the modern times, you need a professional civil service. And so the United States, you know, got Civil Service Commission was established. I'm not sure when. I'm not a historian on this.
Right, 1920s at least.
Yeah, and that started the process of professionalizing the workforce. So now the president has, there's some spoilage. They've got about 3,000 patronage jobs or politically appointed jobs that come in. But out of the millions and millions of federal positions, only a very, very tiny percentage are political appointees. Now, those people have a lot of power when they come in because they are carrying out the policy. But of whatever the administration is. But the fact is that, you know, the standing workforce is that voice of continuity and the voice of good process and good practice. And very often, let's face it, the smart politicals know that to keep themselves out of trouble, they really have to rely on the standing professional workforce.
Yeah, and we learned that from the Brits, to have a professional cadre of people who survive from administration to administration, from prime minister to prime minister, and keep the girl going. And, you know, people forget, if they ever knew, the fact that we've had a couple of presidents assassinated by disgruntled job seekers, you know, who wanted federal jobs, President McKinley, President Garfield, and I think Teddy Roosevelt, who became president that way, he's the one that got this civil service reform, and he had been involved in it big time in New York City.
Yeah, that was right after, you know, McKinley came in at Teddy Roosevelt. Well, that's right. And so, that continuity, I mean, even if policy changes, you still need continuity. I'd just like to use the example of food stamps, a big program and somewhat controversial, but I think it's nobody is going to try to end the food stamp program. But sometimes, you know, one administration wants to expand it, another one wants to change the requirements for it so that fewer people are eligible for it. But the basic mechanisms of fulfilling that policy don't change regardless of what the policy is. And that's why you need people that understand what's going on.
You know, I once had an editor of the Washington Post, a wonderful guy in every way, great mentor, World War II guy, greatest generation. One time I did a story about federal pay, and I took the paper in those days up to him and showed it to him, and he looked at the numbers. And of course, they were much higher than we were making in journalism. And he said, "Are you sure these numbers are right?" And I looked, I was terrified. I said, "Yes, sir." And he said, "This is incredible. They make so much money." He said, "None of them are worth it. None of them, except my neighbor." And his neighbor worked for the then Budget Bureau, now the Office of Management and Budget. And he worked an 80-hour week. He did all these wonderful things. And he was wonderful. And I thought, but did not say, because this guy was my boss, "You're a very lucky man, because you were born in the best country in the world. You went in the best service during the war, the Navy. You went to the best school, Notre Dame. You married the most virtuous woman in the state of Virginia, and you live next to the only federal worker who's worth his salt in government."
What a chance in a million, right?
But I mean, I think that happens to people. They don't like politicians, yet we keep reelecting the same people. We like our politician. We don't like lawyers, but we like our lawyer. We don't like dentists. And I think that's very true for federal workers, don't you?
Well, yes. I think there's a certain amount of institutional madness that sets in with scale. And that's not just true of government entities. It's true of corporations. I mean, you know, you could deal with General Motors or a big airline or something, and you're going to get, occasionally you'll find in somebody that's not very good. And all right. But I mean, most of the people you encounter are fine and want to do a great job, just like they do in the public sector. But sometimes institutions add up to just serving their own institutional needs and seem very bureaucratic. And I have said many times, it's not a function of government versus corporation. It's a function of size and scale, and things just get bureaucratic as they get bigger. But yet that doesn't change the quality of the individuals in there. Same thing with Congress. Yeah, I mean, you know, my Congress was a very nice, pleasant fellow. He used to live next door to my aunt and, you know, sort of over the fence chat kind of guy. But yet you put 535 of them together and it becomes this crazy, chaotic thing.
Well, I'm always intrigued when people will say, I met my congressman, I met my senator, he or she is charming. And I think, no kidding. Yeah, that's why they're there.
That's why they got there.
Yeah. But you know, back to this theme about, do you think that federal workers are maybe have been beaten down over the years and they now sort of automatically think that they're oppressed and unloved and unappreciated?
Well, I think to some extent they have. I don't think it's as bad as they think it is, or as bad as it's often repeated back to them that it is. You know, the union bosses like to say they're beating on us and they're putting us down and so forth. And I think to some extent that has always gone with the territory ever since someone created the word bureaucrat, I guess, which is a word I don't use.
Yeah.
I'll use bureaucracy, but that's a generic thing, again, that goes with bigness, not with whether it's government or private sector. But you know, I think it goes with the territory. I mean, I've been in journalism for close to 40 years, and, you know, nobody likes the media. I remember once I was a launch team of a magazine, a trade magazine, and the competitor we were launching against was a tabloid format newspaper, and there were many, many of them in many fields. But people that we were the experts in the field we were dealing with, getting advice for starting this magazine, they referred to this competitor, which is very popular, as... Well, you're going up against the scandal sheet. It wasn't a scandal sheet. It was a very well-done, well-reported, reputable publication. It just happened to be in the same physical format as scandal sheets. And so, you know, here they went around having experts that read them say, well, that's a scandal sheet.
Yeah.
No, it goes with the territory.
Yeah, even tabloid journalism, depending on how you say it, can be a put-down for a very fun. Oh, I used to tell colleagues at work when they would use the term bureaucrat, I would say, well, why don't they call us hacks? And I'm sure many of them do, hack journalists. So and names can be hurtful.
Yes, they can. And so, yeah, I mean, we don't condone it on federal news radio. I'm just simply saying in that column, I don't think there's as much Fed bashing as people have come to believe there is. And where there is, you know, consider the source. Now, you know, again, when it gets to be something threatening or dangerous or personal, then you've got a problem, and that should not be tolerated. And, you know, it's something, if there's a threat, then you know, law enforcement has to deal with it.
Well, you mentioned earlier in the show Tim McVeigh, and for people who forget, he was the primary bomber in the Oklahoma City bombing of, what, 20 years ago?
Yeah, it was 1993, actually.
Okay. So, but those people were targeted and killed for one reason only, because they worked for the federal government. And McVeigh, I did some research on it, and McVeigh had originally looked at a federal building in Little Rock, Arkansas, but he rejected it, get this, because there was a florist on the first floor, and he was afraid, if you will, innocent people would be hurt. By innocent, he meant people who didn't work for the government. Yet he killed government workers and the children of
government workers
in a nursery.
The daycare center in that building was in the front, and all those children perished. So, that's known as a sick and twisted
madness,
mind.
Yeah.
You know, and that outlier will always be with no matter what it is. I mean, there have been journalists that have been murdered by similar types of people mad at something, but I mean, I'm just saying in the mainstream, when Congress disagrees with the level of contribution to the federal benefits program, you know, federal benefits, especially retirement, you know, you can argue yes or no, that should change. It should be the same 0.8% or it should be 2% or 5%. But at least there is a precedent in the private sector and for millions of people of changing that formula. So it's not, I don't consider that bashing if you want to change a thing like that.
I think it's an excellent point. Thank you very much, Tom Timmon, for being with us and discussing those two columns. We're going to take a short break here on federalnewsradio.com, 1500 AM, and we'll come back and talk with Andy Medici, senior writer with Federal Times. What feds can expect after the Memorial Day break, and maybe some of the sleepers that are out there that possibly might bite you in the pay and benefits area. Earlier, I talked with Tom Timmon. He's our morning drive guy, and we were talking about Tom's column very interesting, very controversial column in which he asked the question, are federal workers really being beaten up and bashed as much as many think they are? And we didn't come to any conclusions. We discussed it at length, but we'd be interested to hear what you have to say about it, either by email to us or the comments section of his column. And that ran 2 weeks ago on a Monday. And the idea was, are feds being beaten up as badly as they think? When we talked to Andy Medici today, one of the issues for federal workers is what's Congress going to do? What does it have in store for federal workers? And we know the laundry list of horrors. They're talking about eliminating the Social Security supplement, and that's something that Jessica Clement of the National Active and Retired Federal Employees and others have estimated could mean thousands of dollars in lost retirement income to federal workers, because people under the FERS system, the Federal Employees Retirement System, would, if they retire before they become eligible for Social Security benefits, they get something called a Social Security or a FERS supplement, and it can be a couple of $100 a month or more, and they receive that money up until they become eligible for Social Security. So if that were to drop by Congress, it would save the Treasury millions and millions of dollars. By the same token, it would cost federal workers or federal retirees millions and millions of dollars. So that's one of the things that's out there. The other that's not on the griddle as yet, but it's always back there, is the so-called chained CPI. And the chained CPI, the CPI, of course, stands for Consumer Price Index. And that is one of the measures that the government, the Bureau of Labor Statistics, uses to measure changes in the inflation rate. It measures inflation or deflation. The CPI, when the CPI goes up, federal retirees, military retirees, people who get retired military pay, and Social Security beneficiaries get a raise, a cost of living adjustment, or a COLA. And that's very important to people, because inflation over time can eat into a fixed pension. So the fact that federal workers get whole or partial COLAs is a very big deal. And that's based on the Consumer Price Index, the CPIW, which is for urban workers, and it measures the prices of goods in urban areas. Changing it to the so-called chained CPI is a very complex issue for a lot of people. The backers of it say that it more accurately reflects living costs for retired people, because when prices go up for one item, people tend to change their buying habits and spend money on something less. We're going to try to reach Andy Medici now. Andy, are you with us?
Yes, I'm on the line.
Oh, okay. Mike. Hey, so we're sorry for the delay. We've had trouble with our crazy board today, and I was just filling in talking about some of the things facing federal workers. I wonder, don't want to put you on the spot, did you get a chance to listen to the earlier part of the show with Tom Timmon?
I listened to a large portion of it, and I read his. I remember reading his original column. Actually.
Yeah, what do you think about that? Tom, in essence, was saying that while feds get beaten up, it's probably not as bad as they think.
Well, that's a tricky subject. I was thinking about it myself. You know, whether federal employees have had it worse recently, and I think an issue that we talk about that I don't think gets enough time is that I think federal employees, at least longer-term federal employees, feel like they used to occupy sort of a place of nonpartisan respect.
Mm-hmm.
And we've talked about how it's become highly politicized over the issue and over the last couple of years. And I think that plays a role, too, is that, you know, while there have been laws changing federal pay and benefits and stuff, largely in the 80s, 90s, there was sort of a consensus that federal employees were sort of used by part of both parties,
yeah.
And I think that's changed. And I think so the attacks, the attacks against federal employees, I'm not sure how much that weighs, but maybe a sense that federal employees are no longer occupy sort of a spot of maybe, let's say, honor or at least gratitude for the service. I think that might play a larger role in it. I would be fascinated to see the attitudes of federal employees who've only been on the job for 1 or 2 or 3 years. I'd be fascinated to see what they think about it.
Well, you know, there's been a feeling over the years, and it seems to have deepened, that many people think that most federal workers are Democrats. They vote Democratic, which I find interesting and ironic, because the Democrats have beaten up feds pretty well from time to time. The contracting out really got jump-started during the Clinton years, big time, when so many jobs were privatized, including things like background checks, and we all know how that worked out as with the Snowden, Edward Snowden situation. But if you look at the complaints or comments that we get on our site here at Federal News Radio and those you get at Federal Times, I would say that feds often are evenly divided in their partisanship, and that I'd even go so far as to say that it's more where you work, both the department you work in, defense versus EPA, for example, and where you live, Massachusetts versus Alabama, for example, flavors your politics as much as the fact that you are a federal worker. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think it's usually a pretty dangerous assumption to treat any group of people as a monolith, you know, and federal employees, they're not just federal employees, you know, as you said before, they're residents of a certain state, they have a certain type of job. I would be shocked if the political affiliations didn't change depending on what type of job they chose in government, which agency, and I have a feeling that you'll see different mixes of political ideologies, whether you're in Border Patrol or the EPA or the Coast Guard or any other agency. I think you're right. I think, you know, federal employees are a diverse group of people, so when it comes to pinning them down, I think saying federal employees as a group might be disingenuous.
Well, if you look at just the Washington area, for example, for many years, Montgomery County, a very liberal place, was represented by Republicans, Connie Morello and people before her, and it was really redistricting that carved up her district and made it pretty safe for the Democrats. And Northern Virginia has been going from red state to sort of purplish, but that said, the seat formerly held by Congressman Frank Wolf went to the Republicans again this year. So even in the Washington area, which tends to be very liberal, you see both parties well represented.
Yeah, I think despite change, you know, things, you know, as they say, despite sometimes things changing, they remain the same. And I think we'll always see some sort of some shifting political ideologies and some shifting party affiliations. But there is room in there. You know, there's also, you know, lawmakers, you know, Republicans, for example, who might be more conservative, but they still have a deep interest in federal issues, Rob Whitman, for example. And so you have people who might not be federal employees' best friend, but they might have an actual sincere interest in, you know, reforming, you know, procurement or, you know, reforming agencies in an honest way. And I think that more than anything is what a lot of people are looking for is, you know, maybe you can't get all of Congress to agree on a large race for federal employees. But I think a lot of federal employees would like to see honest and sincere efforts made at making things better as opposed to, you know, just a series of benefit reductions or pay reductions.
Yeah, well, now speaking of that, the Congress is going to go on its Memorial Day recess, but when it comes back, then you get down to the business of budgeting and appropriating. What's on the table for federal workers, good or bad?
Well, Congress is there. The Appropriations Committees, they're going to be focused on sort of the minutia of agency programs, and as we've covered, and as you guys over at Federal News Radio have covered, is that the budget documents that they're moving forward from are significantly low for civilian agencies, and while they sort of got rid of some of the specific issues involving federal employees, they are asking for a lot of cuts on the table in terms of how federal employees are compensated and on the benefit side. So as they work through the appropriations process, we're going to see, you know, which agencies end up getting hit the biggest. We're also going to see probably various proposals floated on the benefit side to try and change the mix to take some money off the table. As you were saying earlier with the chain CPI, you know, that's something that keeps coming back because it's one of those situations where it might not be at least obvious that the changes are massive, but over time, it cuts a huge amount of money in terms of growth. So, you know, we'll see those proposals continue to resurface, and we'll see much more specifics in terms of the agency-by-agency financial situation.
Well, if I were a politician who genuinely believed in it, believed it was more accurately reflect costs, and if I wanted to save a lot of money, that's the one I would go for. Reason being, it is easy to it would be easy to implement because people don't understand it. They don't understand the fact that the initial cuts would be very small, less than 0.4 percentage point with each CPI. But over time, that would magnify itself, and over a 20 or 30 year period, the savings would be in the billions of dollars to Social Security, to the Civil Service Retirement Fund, and to retired military pay. So that would be the one that I would target if I were going for it. And of course, I'm not the one. The other one is the Social Security. It's not an offset, but it's an extension. And when people who are on Social Security early in the federal in their federal career, they get a Social Security supplement. Would you agree, Andy? Mike, are you there? Yes.
Yeah.
Well, we couldn't have much more trouble today.
Well, you know, I'm sure that if we had to, we'd shout the program from the rooftop.
Yell it out the window.
Listen.
Yeah, I was just saying, in case you were cut off, that if I were a politician who genuinely believed in saving money and believed that the change CPI was fair to retirees, that's the one I would push for, because it's hard to explain, it's hard to understand, and people wouldn't notice its impact in some cases for years.
No, you're right about that. It's one of those situations where it's difficult to explain, but you know, as you were saying earlier on your show, you know, if prices go up, people don't buy the same thing. They switch their buying habits, they change their buying habits to spend roughly the same amount of money by switching from beef to chicken, or, you know, from Mac to PC, you know, various changes like that. But you know, this is one of the areas where a lot of federal employee groups and unions are hyper focused, and that, you know, a lot of lawmakers realize that when you give ground on the chain CPI, that's going to be it. It's never going to be bumped up again to a different inflation metric. So huge savings over time. You're right, but it does amount to a real cut in benefits eventually. And so that's sort of a line in the sand that a lot of groups didn't want to cross. You know, even President Obama first proposed it as part of a budget deal a couple years ago. He's since sort of dropped it. But it's always looming in the background as an issue for federal employees.
Well, that's a good point, that the fact that the change CPI and the then two-year federal pay freeze came out of the White House, and that that bipartisan or commission that the president appointed. And the White House did endorse the two-year pay freeze. Congress added a third, and it did endorse using the change CPI to save money, and it only dropped it, I think, last year because it was an election year, many feel. It hasn't come back, but it certainly could if a huge savings was something they wanted to accomplish.
No, I think you're right. I think the real danger, and a lot of federal employees probably know this, is not so much the standalone bills, although they get attention and traction to different ideas and they sort of show support. It's the fact that if they're whereas a federal employee pay or benefit cut that was bundled inside a much larger need pass legislation, you know, would the president veto a bill and shut down the government if it had chain CPI in it for federal retirees? Would he do it if it had, you know, two more years of pay freeze? You know, I can't answer that question, you know, for President Obama or for any future president, but I think that's where the real danger lies for federal employees.
Yeah, every year that the groups that are fighting to protect the federal retirement system can fight off that and fight off any cuts in the cost of living adjustment is a major victory that year and year after year. And I see from reading the Federal Times that you're about to lose your editor.
Yes, our editor of 15 years, Steve Watkins, he's leaving to pursue some pretty great opportunities. But you know, we're definitely going to miss him. He's been around here for such a long time that it's hard to imagine working without him.
Well, Steve's been on the show a number of times, and please tell him we wish him well. If he's in the neighborhood, drop in and see us.
Oh, I'm sure. You know, if you ever need him, you know, I'm sure you can just give him a call. He's going to still be in the community, and so we'll probably still be hearing from him from time to time.
Very good, very good. Now, coming up, you were saying the appropriations and the budget thing. Do you think it's likely that at the last minute something, some surprise or maybe an old antagonist in the legislative field is going to raise up at the last minute and propose a change? Or do you think feds are maybe going to get a pass this year?
So that's an interesting question. You know, I think a lot of it depends on exactly how committed Republicans are to passing through the appropriations process, a lot of these last-minute ideas and changes pop up in those omnibuses and those continuing resolutions that end up cropping up at the last moment to keep government running. You know, that's where a lot of stuff is pushed into one large bill and passed relatively quickly. So, you know, if you have a continuing resolution or some sort of omnibus instead of the appropriations bills in regular order, I think that that likelihood rises significantly. You know, I think vulnerable areas are still the chain CPI and, you know, the high five as opposed to the high three. I think those are areas that are pretty ripe targets, and I think federal employees should probably be focused more on those than maybe on other areas.
I have on the wall of my office a document. It's a bulletin from the Air Force to civilian employees. Tammy Flanagan, the benefits expert, gave it to me, and it warns them that the Congress is about to take this action, and it mentions going from the high three to the high five for retirement computation purposes. It mentions a variety of other things, and it says these are likely to happen when Congress passes them, and the Office of Personnel Management tells how they're going to work. We will pass it along to you. You know, meantime, stay calm. That was dated in 1982. So these, you know, round up the usual suspects. We've been looking at these things for years. They are very real threats at the time, but they haven't happened. Doesn't mean they won't, but it also, this is the reason that some people get skeptical about these warnings.
You know, I think that's fair. I think mostly it's, you know, all that's old is new again. You know, all the ideas that have been proposed, but they keep getting proposed. I think my only words on that really is that they're likely to happen, but they don't actually happen until they happen, you know.
Yes.
And so for years, you know, Congress has been trying to pass some sort of retirement reform. And then a couple years ago, they did, you know.
Yes.
federal employees are going to be pay more into their retirement, significantly more than older federal employees. And that wasn't going to happen right up until the moment it did. So, you know, likely and actual happening are two different things. But, you know, I think it's good to be aware of the issues, no matter how long they take to sort of unfold.
And I know this is the ultimate stretch on your crystal ball, but so many private companies, including the Washington Post, have dropped their defined benefit retirement plan in favor of a 401k plan in Social Security, you know, letting workers finance their own or much of their own retirement. The federal government, I know, has looked at this from time to time, and we had the FERS retirement system, which replaced CSRS, and there have been some changes in benefits, prospective changes for people hired after a certain date. Do you think the day is coming down the road when either the federal government will be the only outfit in the country left with a defined benefit plan, or do you think the day is coming when the federal government, at least for new employees, may drop a defined benefit plan?
That does stretch the crystal ball,
yeah.
But you know, Mike, I think there is a chance of that in the future. You know, we're not talking about the near future, but in sort of the distant future. You know, right now, I think only 4 to 8% of private companies have a defined benefit plan, and I think a defined benefit plan is sort of a legacy to current employees who have it for years of service, you know, for taking the job over perhaps higher pay somewhere else. But I think people like in my generation and future generations, we don't even have an expectation of it. I think it's going to be very hard to keep a system in place when you have a couple generations of people that have never even had that sort of as an option. So my far-reaching crystal ball says that, you know, in the distant future, you know, that might be something that ends up getting proposed. I know that as for the near future, you know, that's not really an option on the table, but I can see that happening, you know, in generations to come.
Well, I agree, and so many companies that have dropped, many companies never offered a retirement plan in the first place. Many of those that did offer it have gone back on it, and I know a number of employers who at one point gave matching contributions to employees 4, 5, 6% as the government does 5%, they have dropped that as a money saving thing.
Right, exactly. And I think, you know, as much as I want to see a robust retirement system for all, you know, for all American workers, for years of hard work, it's going to be hard to keep intact a system that most people don't really have familiarity
yeah.
with. They weren't growing up being promised it. So,
people will be agreeing with it. Andy Medici, thank you so much. Thanks for listening, folks. Remember, our shows are archived here. You can get them anytime. We'll see you next Wednesday at 10 a.m. and have a good week.